Good evening. I want to call this meeting to order, please. We have a fairly lengthy agenda. We're going to start with the county attorney in a moment. We haven't been together in a while, and I want to remind people, if they have questions, please hold your questions until the end. And I would prefer that each department be able to run through their program, and then they will take questions at the end. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Point of clarification, the end of all of the departments or at the end?
At the end of each presentation.
Okay, thank you.
By the end of all of the departments, I expect to be gone. So but that works for me.
please write your questions down.
Okay, this is the county attorney budget. Can people hear? Sounds all right. The recommended budget, I guess the only really important points about this is that it's all personnel. It's over 97% personnel. The only change that you see represented here is just the fringe. There's really no difference in the budget from 2011 to 2012 except for the fringe. And again, it's just personnel. The revenues are, we basically have three revenues that are counted in there. We get some money from solid waste. We get some money from administration, which comes from the room tax for work we do related to that. And we also get some money from David's department related to foreclosures. The full-time equivalence is exactly the same. It's 3.5. There's no change from this year or the year before, or actually the year before that. The over-target requests supported by the property tax cap, I mean, you guys are obviously a lot more familiar with this chart than I am, but these are the two OTRs that would be needed to restore us to the 2011 levels, and obviously in the two stages. Again, it's just personnel. It's if you basically it just divides the personnel. If we were to cut back to 35 hours and if we were cut back to 37 hours, there's really nothing else to cut. So that just represents what those amounts would be in cutting back personnel hours to reach the 2011 levels. And this, I guess, is the only real point I want to make is that the county really doesn't have any control or much control over how many lawsuits or grievances or disciplines or arbitrations we have. But what we do have control of is how we handle them and how we handle them economically. I think I did this in a lot more detail before, but breaking down the people, but the cost of our county attorney's office for a marginal hour of our time ranges from $26 to the paralegal aide, $26 an hour, to me, the most expensive, which is $55 an hour. When we don't use us and we have to go outside, it's $200 an hour. So the conclusion is it's obviously a lot more economic to do as much as we possibly can in-house. Interestingly, that contrasts with a lot of other departments, as you probably know. I mean, at a time in the past, we decided that it didn't make sense for the county to do landfilling, for example, because it's so much cheaper in the private industry. We decided the same in the hospital. And obviously this year, the CHA. And for reasons... because we're basically in different industries, in many things, or some things the county does, it's cheaper to do it for the private industry to do it. That obviously doesn't end the inquiry of whether the private industry should do it. But interestingly, and for reasons I really can't understand, in county attorney or in law, it's much cheaper for us to do it. And it sort of emphasized the difference between our different departments and how we compare to the outside world. And it doesn't have anything to do with our brilliance or any problems with other departments. It's just interesting to note that for whatever reason in the industry that I'm in, it's much cheaper for us to do it in-house to the extent that we can, and cutting actually costs us money. And then there really isn't any difference between the over-target request and the property tax cap, because everything is in the county attorney's recommended budget at either level. And that's the presentation. I know it's pretty short, but I hope that's good. And if there are any questions.
Are there any questions? Peter and Mike.
When I was on the town board of the town of Ithaca for 6 years before coming to this organization, and we made the opposite argument, that it was cheaper to just bill by the hour than to hire a town attorney. And the argument was, well, if there's nothing to do, they just sit around twiddling their thumbs. It's hard for me to just wonder, is that a general rule, you think? Or think the town of Ithaca was wrong or what?
It's interesting. I mean, we do somewhat different things than most towns, at least with litigation and often with their arbitrations, hire outside counsel anyway, even when they do have permanent attorneys. It's hard to say. I mean, I wonder about the choice of a lot of towns and stuff who decide to, and most towns do that, hire somebody by the hour as opposed to having somebody on staff. It's sometimes hard to keep people on staff, particularly in they're hard to get good lawyers for positions like that because of the political nature. Town boards change and people don't want to give up their practice to be like a full-time attorney in that sort of setting. But I think larger towns and cities are better off the more they can do in-house. And the more they could keep stability in the office so that it doesn't change with politics, because the numbers are inarguable. I mean, you know, if you're talking about $50 an hour or so for me, and my equivalent is, you know, 200 is really low. You know, the numbers don't lie. So, you know, what other municipalities do, but I think to the extent the municipality can keep an office and can do that stuff, it's better off.
Mike.
John, what have we done now with the cost for the code compilation and updates?
My understanding, and I should check this with Joe, is that it's now in my budget. It was left out of the budget really inadvertently 1 year, last year, and we had to come back and get money for it, as you recall. But the idea was that it was supposed to be in the county attorney budget. To me, it doesn't really matter which budget we put it in. What happened, I think it was last year or the year before, we neglected to put it in any budget.
I didn't see it in the county attorney budget here. Is it here?
It's rolled up in the category.
It's within a category?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see it on the contract list either.
Right.
It's not in what?
Shouldn't it be in the contract list? No, we contract for that?
We do have a contract for that, and I didn't know if it wasn't on the contract list.
At least I didn't see any item for your department there. Maybe I missed
okay.
it.
We'll get you a list of the contract.
Right. The contract is with General Code, and we do have one. So it should be on the list, which administration people. Well, if it's not, then we should update that.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Carol.
Jonathan, you mentioned doing some work for the tourism program. Could you tell us some more about that?
Sure. As you know, the tourism, it generates a lot of contracts, as well as a lot of administrative, keeping track of the money and the payments. And that's, for a long time, been a shared duty between our office and the county administrator's office. We've always done that, actually, since the beginning. And it's only in the past 2-3 years that the county administrator has decided to allocate some of the money to our department, but the work's always been done there.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, John.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Soil and Water Conservation District?
Which is what? Okay, this is Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm Craig Scott, the district manager. This will be quite short, too. So our recommended budget by the county administrator is to be level with 2011. That'd be $138,938. We put in two requests for over target, which you'll see. The over target supported by the property tax cap was $4,724. And the main reason why we really feel we need to stay level is our health insurance costs are skyrocketing. I mean, it's not news to anybody, but ours are really skyrocketing. And we're going to have to make some tough decisions on health insurance if we don't. So, for an example, our 2011 health insurance expenses are going to be somewhere around $50,000. I can't give you the exact number because we've had some people go in and out through the year, but that's about what it's going to come up. And those are all just single policies. No one in the district has family policies. And the board had to make a tough decision recently that we'll still offer family policies, but the individual will have to pay the whole difference between the single and the family because, well, our single policies are over $10,000 a year now. So, and this next year, we have an expected increase of 6.9% to 9.9%. We have been working on legislation to try to get the district included in the county consortium. Joe and Kevin thought we would see quite considerable savings if we could get in there, but the law doesn't allow it. Senator Seward's office worked on a bill this past year, got it passed through the Senate, but it didn't get through the Assembly. So we're hung for another year on these high costs. And then, of course, everybody knows what the retirement's doing. Our contribution is projected contribution is over $27,000 this year. So I know sometimes people don't like all these comparisons, but I just thought it was time to do it again. These figures represent all of our neighboring counties that touch us and the kind of support they get from their counties. Huga, I couldn't get the exact number. The manager up there and I were playing phone tag, but I know it's greater than 400,000. That's a conservative number. Chemung, 2011, received 150,000. Their 2012 request is 165. Of course, everybody's in this process. Nobody knows where everything's going to fall out, but they said the worst case scenario would be they would remain level. Cortland, their 2011 appropriation was 300,000. Their 2012 request is for level funding. Schuyler's 2011 was 145,000. They're requesting level funding. Seneca County, their 2011 was 306,510, and they are requesting a slight increase. And Tioga, their 2011 was 189,235, and they're requesting level funding. But I thought this was interesting when we're talking about health insurance, because every county's different. How they fund their districts is different. However they do it, it's all been somewhat similar but somewhat different. Tioga County pays 100% of the district's share for health insurance, and they said that was $63,000 in 2010. The employee contributions are very low, and so you really have to add that benefit to their appropriation, and so their total support is $250,000. And so in the end, we asked for the to maintain maintain our second OTR was $10,837 to get us back to current levels, and that is recommended by the county administrator.
Craig, let me just say one thing before I take questions. I actually appreciate the fact that you included all the other counties and what their contributions were. I think that is significant when we're looking at our budget. My question is, what is the 10,837 in the last in your OTR request?
Well, that too is to try to maintain our current levels.
In other words, you would add that on to people.
Yeah,
increase our hours.
Yeah, it would go towards. Well, it'll probably go towards the health insurance. To be realistic.
Hands around the room. I saw Will, Mike, Pat, Pam, Carol.
Hi, Greg. Can you speak a little more about the resistance or the fact why the assembly did not act on your request, which seems more than reasonable? And did you get local support?
It never came
that?
Out of the committee. They just let it sit in committee. That's all I know.
Okay.
I think from talking with Assemblyman Morelli's office, because he was the sponsor and Barbara Lipton was a co-sponsor, he has a bill, a similar bill for Monroe County, that he wants to put forward this year, and it sounded to me like they want to connect them to try, which I think is going to probably hurt the chances of our bill. I mean, you know, our bill was very simple. It just said you could add soil and water, and it listed some other entities in the county, and it passed in the Senate with only one dissenting vote. I mean, it flew through there.
Mike.
That was my question.
Okay, thank you. Pat.
There are some reasons. I mean, it seems pretty clear from the list you showed us that our level of support here in Tompkins County is less than any of these surrounding counties, and just on the face of it, I don't see the reason why. Is there some historical factors that come into play here, or are there programs that the other counties offer that we don't offer? Is there something that it would explain that?
I think program-wise, we probably have as big a program as any of those counties, and the most diverse program. I mean, we're all fairly similar, but I think in some respects we probably have more. I guess the only thing I can say is this county didn't choose to fund a district until 1994, mm-hmm. where everybody else had been funded for years, so it's been a building process, I guess. That's all I can attribute it to.
Pam.
My question's been answered, thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, Craig, could you refresh our memories on how our funding fits into the other funding that you get? I mean, you exist without us and do stuff.
We get a lot of grants.
And what's the impact of what we do, if any, on the rest of your budget?
Well, we have to have match for a lot of those grants, and that's where. And even our state funding, that comes every year, it's $30,000 per district. Plus, then there's a couple other ways to get about $15,000 more, but. We have to, for that $30,000, we have to show that we had another $30,000 to match. So there has to be those matches. The county money is so important because you have to use that support to match state money lots of times.
Thank you. Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Hey, Craig. Card two for you. The first thing, comparing us to the other counties, you may not know the answer to this right now. Can you? So much of Tompkins County is receiving tax exemptions, property tax exemptions. Is it possible to find out what the percentage of property that are receiving exemptions are for these various counties? The other question, and it sort of piggybacks on what Carol was asking, you've been really successful in gleaning a lot of grants, FLOPA and whatnot. Is it possible also to find out how successful these five counties have been in getting grants to?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the agricultural non-point source pollution grants, we are number one in the state now for getting those. Cayuga County is number two. We surpassed them.
Mention the dollar amount.
Well, just in the last couple of years, it's been over $2 million worth just in that grant program. And then, you know, we do our stream grants, invasive species. I mean, DEC is looking to contract with us for the money for the hydrilla that they're contributing. They've got $50,000 that they want to get out the door this fall, and that's going to come through us.
And the second one is with regard to the recent flooding and emergency service piece. How do you interact with FEMA and with SEMO?
If we get invited to one of the towns to their meetings, then we go. And we definitely will be involved in Caroline because of the Banks Road, because we already had a stream project plan for that section of stream. And actually, it was even in draft design, but that's going to change now because the stream has moved so much. But, you know, I've been in contact with Don Barber. He's trying to set up a meeting with all of us to interact on that big project. You know, in years past, I mean, we've been in Danby after such events, and Caroline, Newfield. So we get involved pretty much, you know, especially when there's, you know, stream problems.
And the flood hazard program, you're overseeing that now on a contract with the planning department.
Right.
Any other questions? Thank you, Craig. TCAV is next.
This is really great.
You want? Do you have a slideshow?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it? Come on up front. Are you going to be answering questions, or are you talking on this? Both of you. Okay.
Oh, great.
For TCAT and the planning, they're kept in the same budget lines for the county. They're essentially two separate components that work together, but for budgeting purposes, we keep them in the same area.
Sure.
Is that on that microphone?
No, it's on.
Okay.
Battery might be dead.
That's all right.
Low battery.
Okay.
Can you just repeat what I just said?
No. For budgeting purposes, and in our budget book, the TCAT, Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, and transportation planning are within the same unit, in the same section. While they're different offices, they do work closely together.
We got another one here. Put that one up there and we'll move the other one back. Take two. Go ahead.
So the majority of legislators have also been to the TCAP presentation back in July.
August.
So August, beginning of August, sorry. That refers to that same portion up there. I've also invited Dwight here to explain transportation planning, which is his component of the budget. Dwight, do you want to say anything? No.
Fine.
Why do we have that?
So you notice there is a net local related to transportation planning. There is a small piece of that that is necessary in order to receive grants. How much is that, Dwight? Like 4,000?
As part, you mean the portion?
So your net local, where it says 81,904.
Okay, the 75,000 of that net local is allocated to Gadabout,
yep.
And the rest is used for matching grants.
Right. Just I know that last year came up the question about whether or not Dwight was what the relationship between Dwight and federal funds coming in was, and it's a very small piece of the budget is needed in order for Dwight to leverage those funds. And again, that other 75,000 is Gadabout. Dwight's just one guy right over there in transportation planning. And our portion of the 800,000 helps pay for, how many employees do you have over? 125 employees over at TCAT. They have no property tax, they have no requests below the property tax cap, and they have none above. Dwight, do you want to talk a little bit about?
I just want to say, since this has come up in the past, just what is involved in the transportation planning department of one, division of one, is we develop and manage federal and state grant programs. As Kevin said, it includes $75,000 of county support for Gadabout, which the county has done since the late 70s. And we also coordinate and manage federal job access and new freedom funds, which is used by is used to support 13 services in the county that are all part of grants that the legislature authorized us to ask for funding for.
And that's it.
Questions? Dooley and Peter.
You've mentioned Gadabout a couple of times. What is their total budget?
Gadabout's budget is, I believe, in the area of $1.3 million.
So our $75,000 is just a very small part of their budget.
It's about 5% of their budget.
Thank you.
Peter and Pat, did you have your hand up also?
Yes.
All right, well, Peter's first.
May I see the last slide back again?
I don't know anything about your program, so I was wondering what goes into develop and manage federal and New York State transit grant programs. Could you give me some examples of what
sure.
those programs are?
We have, in terms of active federal grants right now, we have 11 active grants. They are primarily used to support TCAT, to enable TCAT to operate and to enable TCAT to purchase buses. Is the great majority of the use of those funds. Some of these funds are competitive, and some are appropriated every year by Act of Congress.
So why doesn't TCAT handle that function?
It is the county is the grant recipient, and we are the ones under contract with the federal government. And TCAT does have responsibility to spend the funds as intended, but it is the county's role it's the county's legal responsibility to have the technical capacity to manage these funds in compliance with the federal rules and regs, and that's also duplicated on the state side.
Okay, and what department are you in? You're a county employee?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've been a county employee for 31 years.
And what department?
I am presently in Department of Social Services.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pat, go ahead.
Could you please go back to the first slide? I'm not sure if I missed something when I was trying to adjust the speaker or if I just didn't understand it. In the under the transportation planning, the far right, what's the reason for the big jump in expenditures and revenues in the far right column over there?
Earlier in the summer, we applied for a competitive grant, mm-hmm. and these numbers were based on the assumption that we would receive it. And I discussed with Kevin earlier that since we did not receive this grant, that we would revise the expenditures and revenues down approximately $300,000, but that doesn't affect what the net local amounts are.
When we put the budget together, we anticipated an additional grant, and it's not going to come in. So these numbers will have to be changed, and we're going to have to get approval from this body to do that, too, to change those numbers in this book.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for either of these gentlemen? Yes.
Well, it's actually for Kevin. You mean you can't update figures without our acting on them?
That is correct.
Why is that?
Because what comes in is a tentative budget that's handed to you.
It's a recommended budget.
Right. And so if this were to pass, or if the group was not able to come to a consensus by the said date in December, this is the budget book that would be in place.
But we would want updated. You update other pages.
Yeah, but they're usually. That doesn't have any effect on the bottom. I guess this doesn't have an effect on the bottom line. I guess I'd have to ask Jonathan or David to respond to that.
Right, no, we can get updated numbers.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect the bottom line.
No.
Okay.
Right.
Then, yes, I can adjust those.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Harold, Frank.
No, he was first.
Now I'll give you. Let me do it. Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Just because this is sort of more on the record, you know, we got more detailed information on TCAT earlier, but I just want to be clear on the figure in our book showing state aid of $4.3 million, $4,376,000, which now in the 2010, and then it went down to $3 million in 2011, and is projected to continue at $3 million. I just want to understand the reason for the decrease of state aid, and on the TCAP figures. This is on the 4107. That's a big drop. So I just want to have my memory refreshed about what that drop was from and whether it's permanent.
There's a tough question, Jeff.
I thought I was going to escape without a question, but I believe you're referring to the state aid at SOSTOA, and that's a state appropriation that's given out every year. The number does vary from year to year, and we've been told that there weren't cuts going into 2011, but the appropriation is a little less than what we thought. So it's in the governor's budget, and it's appropriation for the formula group, upstate formula group, and we're a member of that. And from our budget presentation, you probably remember, we received STOA based on passengers and miles. So that's how we're reimbursed.
Okay. And do you still anticipate that being at 3 million, or do you foresee it by the end of 2011 that it could go up from that?
Well, the actual STOA, yeah, is going to be higher than that. I hope I'm talking on the right line here. Roughly, it's going to be closer to 4 million next year. I'm trying not to confuse you here.
For budgeting purposes, we just put that number in there, and it adjusts based on what they get in terms of miles and passengers.
Okay, so it's in here as 3 million, so it could be as high as 4 million? That would be
the simple answer is yeah.
Well, that would be good to have an updated figure.
Let him look.
Yeah.
This is a conservative.
Yeah, the actual number that we projected in 2011 was 4.1 million, and going into 2012, we're looking right about 4 million.
Well, would it make sense for us to get updated figures on that then?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Frank.
two things, Jim. First, Carol, there isn't a price that you don't have to pay with the increase in the revenue. I mean, the gas prices drive some, because the STOA is a formula-driven number, you don't get a pure reimbursement. You have to. You got to go to the top line too, which is expenditures. Even though that 3 million may become 4 million, that 4.1 million or 4.2 million might become 5 million. In order to generate the extra, you're paying a little more too. You don't know what the revenue will come. You don't know what the revenue will be based on the ridership.
Right, it's just a placeholder. It won't affect the net local. So whatever we put into additional revenues, I'll also jack up the expenditure by that same amount.
I'm just trying to be clear on all the money we're not getting from the state that we used to be. That's where
I
was going.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Thanks.
Yes. I want to go to that transportation planning piece, the one that you were just talking about where we didn't get the grant.
Correct.
First, the 81904. Will that, because the grant wasn't received, will that 81904 change?
No.
That won't change.
No.
And in our budget book, we have 87304 for transportation planning. Where is that carried in here? It's on page 109. Pardon me, it's on page 109 in section 4. It says program summary. Did you find it?
We're searching.
Okay, thank you.
This is from the program impact form.
Okay.
Why is it 87 versus the best guess at the time?
Yes, we can work with the 81 figure.
So the 87304 is...
These documents were sent at different times, so I'm sure when he developed one version of the budget, it looked like this, and the later budget... Look more like 81.
So along with the other numbers, that'll be updated.
I'll replace this one as well. Yep.
Okay.
I'll have pages for you guys next week.
Okay.
Leslin and someone else over here have their hand up.
Okay. So what Frank just asked was part of my question. I had the hardest time following these budget pages, and now these numbers are different than what's going on in here. So can you, Kevin, please, for my benefit, and maybe there are others, starting at 105.
Sure. So 105.
Help me understand what's going on. The net local share.
Carol brought up a good point. What's been reflected as a placeholder for dollars coming in and dollars going out are actually a little low, about $1 million low. So I need to adjust the contribution to sponsored agencies for 2011 or for 2012.
Babe, where are you?
Page 107.
Thank
I'm sorry, you.
You
were at me at 105.
I was asking you to start at 105.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Okay, at 105, nothing changes here.
Nothing changes here at the moment.
What will happen, likely, both expenditures and revenues will adjust a little bit, but the net local will stay the same at that middle part.
Okay, where is that number reflected and what you have up there?
The sum of the two. So if you were to add expenditures
top
line and the expenditures down in the bottom component, that would equal expenditures you see in the middle of this 105.
Okay, so transportation planning piece and TCAP piece is what equals this number here.
Yes.
Okay.
Well.
And 107.
Oh, sorry.
107, the expenditures contribution to sponsors agency will go up $1 million, as well as state aid, but the net local will stay the same.
Many thanks.
And then on 108, nothing will change. About $300,000 will go down in expenditures, and $300,000 will go down in revenues, but the net local will stay the same.
Okay. I'm following you now.
Will.
Thanks, Jim. Last summer when we gathered and you made your presentation, I sensed that times were about to get difficult for you, and I was wondering how you're going to make it work. But you've given us a budget that is within the tax cap. What are we giving up for? What have you had to do to make that work?
Well, the planning assumptions that we presented back in August remain the same today. Things that we are working on as we speak. There will be service cuts. There will be a rural fare increase. We're still holding firm on the 0% wage increases for all employees. We're working on hiring freezes of two positions. We're limiting our health insurance increase to a 5% increase. We're controlling our overtime, reducing advertising. So the list that we presented in beginning of August is exactly what we're doing today. So by doing that, it's a $700,000 plus or minus swing in our budget to help us get through these tough times.
Okay. And on that list, is there anything that you feel particularly that is going to hurt the community? For example, increasing fares for rural passengers.
That question I would answer that the fare increase obviously will have an impact on the rural ridership, and when you reduce service, you're always going to impact people that are using that service as well. So I'd say those two would be at the top of the list for what we do as a service.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Peter.
I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the cuts in services that you're giving. And I'd like to know a little bit about how you come to the decision, not the particular answers, but what yardstick you use when you make that decision. And what I was thinking was, suppose you are a private company with no particular interest in public service, then what you would do, I would guess, is you'd cut the routes that make the least money, or at least cost you more than they make. But when you're a public service, then you can't quite think that way. I don't exactly know how you think. So I'd like to know how it is that what yardstick did you use for deciding where to cut the services?
Yeah, that's a good question. We, for the first time at TCAT, we used as a starting point, we looked at our fare box reporting. We looked at ridership. We got it down to the trip basis on each route, and we started targeting certain very low productive, low ridership trips. From there, we went into the exercise of, are there options in those areas for people to use transit? So we factored in, you know, if there's a route that's nearby or running on the same street, that would be a candidate for a reduction in service. So there's the human side of it, there's the number side of it, and our service development team painstakingly spent hours on coming up with, and I said this in our presentation, what we feel has the least impact on our service, but if we were asked to do more than this, it would get very painful very quickly. So It wasn't just numbers. It was what are the options for people that are living in those areas, and we reduced service where we could, not taking away the service.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Don Ellis, Weights and Measurements. Still one person department.
Oh, yeah.
The right thing. It's a staff meeting right here.
Yes.
I'm Don Ellis. I am Weights and Measures. I'm the only person in Weights and Measures. It's pretty much the same scenario as it has been the past couple of years. In order to make the budget cuts, I've had to cut my salary and fringes. It's going to be the same as always. If I'm not here to do the work, I can't get the work done. So it's going to result in businesses not getting tested, loss of revenues for the department. In order to make the cut, I had to cut my salary back to 35 hours a week instead of 37 and a half in the previous 2 years. That's, for the most part, everything. Very simple and basic. I really don't have any flexibility other than my salary.
Peter, Mike, go ahead.
Quick question. Could you remind me, is this a mandated service that we're required to provide in the county?
Yes, but with flexibility,
with
guess.
With flexibility.
Is the way.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike.
Not so much a question, but I would just point out that our county doesn't do a whole lot for consumer protection. Some areas have whole departments or whole agencies that do that. Don is pretty much it, along with our restaurant inspections and the health department and maybe a few other areas. But as far as protecting our consumers from fraud or dangers, we don't do a lot of that.
Yeah, I also protect the businesses, too. I make sure that they're not giving away products and stuff like that. So I'm working both sides of the street.
Go ahead, Will.
So what we're giving up is 2 hours of your time per week.
5 hours a week, actually.
5 hours a week. And how does that translate in terms of what reduction of what you can do?
Roughly, it's going to be about 50 businesses. So as far as revenues, it's hard to say, because one business that I do is almost $1,000 worth of revenue. Another business is only $20. Mm-hmm. So it's... As far as the revenue end of it, it's hard to say what it would be, but roughly it would be, guessing, 30 to 50 businesses I wouldn't be able to do.
Okay. And I should know the answer to this, but are you also responsible for enforcement when you find violations? Or
yes.
I
do everything. I do the office work. I answer phones, emails. Field work.
You are the department, yes.
I am the department. I do budget, accounts payable, accounts receivable.
Thank you.
We might be able to find some part-time work for you someplace. Go ahead, Peter.
I hope so.
Yeah, this is not a question. This is a testimonial. Half a dozen months ago, I decided I had been shortchanged at a gas pump, and I called up the Department of Weights and Measures, whoever they are, and told them, whoever answered the phone, I don't know, why I thought that I had been shortchanged at the pump. And I was really, you know how it is with government, you call up and they say, oh, we'll take care of that, and then you never hear them again. Well, that was not the case. I got very quickly, within a week, I think, I got a call back saying that they checked out this pump and found that it worked perfectly. So there you have it.
Someone else had their hand up? Unduly, go ahead.
You said this is similar to last year. It certainly is. And last year we learned that you already could not do some of the things that you needed to do. And right. To see you cut further just seems so wrong to me. I absolutely agree with what Mike says. We do very little in the way of consumer protection here. You are it. And this is one over-target request that I'm going to seriously look at.
Thank you. Carol. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure who to ask it of, though, because it's...
I'll throw it out and we'll see.
I guess Kevin. So this was not recommended. The above the property tax cap over target request of $9,753 is not recommended.
That is correct.
Can you talk about why?
Joe
isn't here, yes.
Excuse me, but that's a question Joe would have to answer, I think.
My question then is there somebody here in Joe's stead as we go through tonight's
items? Well, Kevin
items?
Is.
Kevin, yes, that's why I asked Kevin.
I do not know the answer.
Okay, you don't know the answer,
not
so we should
review.
Save it for Joe. Can
save
you
it for Joe. I can actually make sure that gets on the
please.
List.
Please. And that's my question. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Don.
Board of Elections.
So our budget is actually pretty basic as far as we wouldn't have had to ask for any new funds except that we have presidential elections next year. And, of course, to cover the loss of our two senior technicians due to the percentage cuts. Our revenues are mostly from chargebacks to the towns. Most everything else that the towns used to pay for, the county now pays for. And we gained some revenues by assisting Ithaca City School District, which we were able to do because we have the two senior voting machine technicians. So,
Next year, you see one full-time equivalent being added, and that is increasing our senior techs, which are currently half-time, to full-time for the 1 year. And it's next year, obviously, presidential year is we run the presidential primary, which promises to be, hotly contested. It's running an election at the same time that we normally run village elections and are preparing for the school district elections. There's a lot of demand at that point, and and as you get into September and October, you get high demand for absentee ballots. Our absentee ballot over the counter triples. We go from about 1,000 absentee ballots in a peak year to about 4,000. It's a lot of counter work. The work that these techs are doing allows us to, our staff to adequately handle all the demand that comes over the counter. And there's just an awful lot of additional work. And we've always had an additional full-time equivalent in a presidential election year, and it's absolutely necessary to, you know, run an election properly.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. No, keep going. Finish
okay.
up. I'm breaking
and
my own
the,
rule.
The only, the other request in there is two primaries. One primary is our basic primary that has been pushed out of our budget to see exactly how much the cost would be every year, because we never know where we're going to have a primary until July of the following year. We always have full primaries in the presidential election year, and then we have an additional primary in April of next year for just president delegates. So that is why we're asking for the $72,000.
Most of those are one-time as well.
Yeah, the presidential primary only needs to be one time. It would be nice to eventually build back in some money for primaries, because then we have to come back in the middle of the year to ask for funding. So if we could get some type of base eventually, that would be really helpful. I don't think we need the full 32 every year, but a base. We were able to cover some of the primary expenses this year so that we don't have to come for so much money through the sale of our old voting machines and having this new revenue from the school board elections. So that's it.
Okay. I had Brian. I had Will. I had Pam. I had Peter. Brian?
Thanks. One of them was just answered relative to the primaries. My other question was, what are you finding in terms of work that has to be performed by the techs now that you have the new voting machines? You know, the levers were more, I guess, mechanical versus, you know, more geek type stuff, for lack of a better word.
I would say that your maintenance and between the maintenance and the setup, it's just, you know, I can't put a percentage on it, but it's much more work. I mean, many times more work to prepare an election with electronic machines. With lever machines, you could probably spend a couple hours a year, you know, to maintain and get them ready for an election. These electronic machines, they require you know, maintenance four times a year. The maintenance program that they want that we do has got 108 steps to it. You know, admittedly, a lot of them are quick, but you have to methodically take care of these machines before every election. After you program the machine, you got to proof the ballot. Then once you proof the ballot and the audio for the audio sessions, then you have to run a test deck to make sure that the machine's tabulating correctly. You got to, it's just a lot more complicated and a lot more time demanding.
That's actually kind of what I thought. And is that line in your budget going to be able to cover that?
Yes.
We believe so.
Okay.
Will.
Well, Stephen, you talked about the old machines. You reminded me how much I liked them and how much I was sorry to see the new ones arrive. You said, Elizabeth, that you sold them. Is somebody actually using them, or they've come scrap?
One person bought one. We kept one in our office because I like them too. But...
Several school districts bought them for a dollar. We sold about six that way.
I have Pam and then Peter.
My question was answered. Thank you.
Peter.
These presidential elections aren't surprises when they come around. I think they come on a pretty regular schedule. Isn't that right? Would it make any sense to divide that extra cost among the 4 years and keep them in a rollover funds or something like that, so that they would be already funded when it came there, or doesn't it?
Makes sense.
David, do you want to take that one?
Well, the problem you have there is that the books close at the end of the year, and while they may have money in the budget on the appropriation side, if the county loses revenues it goes against all, they could disappear because we close out. So it wouldn't be the appropriate way to handle it on budget. You'd more like the better way would be a sort of a off balance sheet reserve that would stay there until such time as you needed it.
So we could do that if we wanted?
Yeah. In the future, you might be able to, yeah.
Okay.
Pam?
What is the difference between something like this and rollover?
It's earmarking the money, in a sense.
Rollover
when
is not
you don't have access to it.
Technically, it's not guaranteed.
Right.
You know, because it's
well,
commingled.
Well, nothing's guaranteed.
No, I mean, but it's, you know, it's... You can't... I mean, they're just not capable of keeping a separate guaranteed reserve for every operation in the budget.
Right.
Mike?
That discussion needs a long discussion at some point. I remember years ago trying to discuss why we didn't put money in for snow removal to have built up for when you had those bad years. But it's reserve accounts. But if I could, Jim, I wanted to ask... the state legislature is wrestling with the fall primary date. I see in the paper today that now they're asking the feds for another waiver to allow it to stay in September. The problem, of course, being that a lot of military ballots don't make it, and that's what the federal government wants, the primaries changed. If we get put back to August or July or June, which they've talked about, does that affect us financially in some way? I mean, does that put more pressure on you with everything else going on? Do you need more people?
Well, last year, financially, it cost us more money because what happened was is the state didn't certify the ballot. They certified the ballot even though there was changes coming. So we actually had to send the ballots out because it was certified, and a lot of counties didn't. So now we're in court over this because they didn't send them out on time. Because we knew there were changes coming, and then we had to reprint ballots and send all of them back out again. As far as needing more staff, I'm not sure that we really would. It would just, it actually would relieve us just a tiny bit so that we could, see what happens is we have a primary, you have 9 days to certify the primary. You're already starting to program the ballot for the general, and if you have any court cases or any type of thing, it holds everything up so that you're working around the clock as far as get everything out. But so it would really, it would be a relief to us. I worry about them moving the primary dates, especially in this county, because Steve and I are in agreement. We would prefer August rather than June. We're actually not in the majority because of the college students coming back. We feel that they may miss out if the primary date is too early.
But would the petitioning process move back? Does that interfere with your office?
It'll run into other elections. That would be a problem.
Petitions would be
we
filed.
We might need maybe some
same time as we're having village elections, probably. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Might be a little bit. I mean, right now it flows smoothly. I'd like to see, personally, late August.
Yeah, late August. Would
So it sounds like you could work through it all right.
Yeah, I think you could.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions for BOE?
I'm having trouble following why money can't be accrued for primaries. I didn't understand. It's okay if it's an off-balance sheet. A long time ago, by which I mean 5 years maybe or longer, different departments had budget lines that were equipment replacement lines. And each year, more would be accumulated in those lines in anticipation of buying something big. We don't seem to do that anymore, but that was legal, wasn't it?
See, it's handled administratively. Basically, you had a line item, you budgeted, and you didn't spend it, and it went into rollover. Rollover is part of the fund balance, so we add up all those little rollover balances, and if we have a fund balance, then we tell you how much of the fund balance was obligated for rollover.
I keep a separate, there's a separate database. So we have the financial software that has to be open and closed every year.
But it's not technically, you know, official reserve. It's sort of administrative policy.
The rollover doesn't fit in the financial software. Rollover ends up being something that has to be done.
And the rollover is not guaranteed, because if, let's say, you have the rollover and you had you add all the balances up, and let's say sales tax came in $2 million on the budget and it wiped out all those unexpended balances. Therefore, it's not really protected, because it's not. Though you, the intent was to. That's why it's difficult to handle it that way.
Well, just out of curiosity, let me ask Steve and Elizabeth, what is the dollar amount that it would be good to have in a base budget so that we wouldn't have to have your budget going up and down and up and down every other year?
Well, a primary costs us between $32,000 and $35,000 for a full primary. So, like last year, we anticipated the city primary, so we had asked for $10,000 for the base budget. So I think that if you run a full primary, it's $20,000 just to pay the election inspectors, and it's another $7,000 to move the voting equipment, which we did try to save money and move the voting equipment by ourselves, but it wasn't practical at all. So depending on the year, I would say depending on, we never know exactly where primaries would be, but I would say a base of $10,000.
But it would be, but closer would be half of the 32 to 35
yeah.
range. Okay, thank you.
Frank, you have your hand up?
Yes. Maybe you answered this one already. Page 23, I'm impressed with how close you've been budgeting. But I'm curious as to why you've exceeded the cap by a dollar. It cost more to print the paper, didn't it?
It's not one machine that kept.
That's right.
Frank?
We can find the dollar.
Oh, there you go. Jim just made it. thank you.
Okay. Carol?
Yeah. This question maybe goes back further than our current budget book goes back in terms of how many staff, the last time we had a presidential election and the time before that, did you have to hire more staff to accommodate that in those years?
We always asked for one FTE to help out.
We've always had
that one time. It's always been granted. And what we've done with that is split the one FT into many between the two parties to help during the surge.
Okay, and is that a trained election person, or
we try to hire someone? We try to hire, like, inspectors or someone that comes, because, like you said, it's a one-time for 4 years, so we try to...
Yeah, I mean, historically, I think that we've hired, you know, election inspectors that have identified that are really good, that we think would work well in the office. This year, we're asking to, you know, we're going to use the technicians, make them each full-time, and they're very familiar with our operation because they've been there. And the thing you have to remember is the presidential election years are just way different than the other years in the cycle. You may be allocating another $35,000 to run a primary. But this is a very active community. We have a high volume of affidavit ballots at the election. We have a high volume, much higher volume for absentees and federal voters, overseas voters, and all that stuff is you just can't see by looking at an additional primary costing $35,000.
Okay, and I'm sort of going in the same direction that I think Peter was going in terms of if this is something we can anticipate is going to come up every 4 years. And I'm just wondering if there's any way we could be more creative, if not for this year, in the future, about anticipating it, making sure that some work that could happen at other points happen in the other 3 years, and or... do something in terms of shared staff between departments so that the times that you need it, there wasn't other county staff, existing county staff who were at a slow point coming in. It just
well, historically,
to go through
presidential
this every 4 years is
you know, we've had people from assessment, which is right above us, come down and pitch in when it's really a really, really heavy time. And we, I mean, you know, next year in October, stop by our office. You may not be able to get in.
No, I've been there. I know.
Yeah, it's just, and, you know, we grab people wherever we can. Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Your elections seem to work well enough to get most of us here, so appreciate
there is one really complication, though, with election workers. You know, it's the only thing in the tax code that I'm aware of that there's a limit that you don't withhold any taxes for a certain level of election workers. Was it $1,300. So $1,300 of election worker is tax exempt, no FICA or taxes. But if you go over the $1,300 to pay for election worker, it's retroactive from day one. Now, this is a big burden on the finance department because figuring out, and like if a county employee works for them as an election worker, which some take off time and become election workers, they get a separate W-2 for that purpose.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, because we have some
obscure facts. But,
can I ask one more? But is it still true that that you have to be physically capable of working from 6 in the morning till 9 at night before you can take advantage of this?
Legally, we can't for split half it. The positions, we could split the shift. We still have to have the other half happening the full time there. You have to have continuity. One person for each party the whole time frame. Administratively,
if we had to staff these sites, you know, all split shifts, we'd be going out and hiring, you know, 500 people instead of 250 for the day, and that would probably, it may not be worth it. I don't think it would be. Luckily, we have some hardy souls in this county that are willing to put in the 19-hour days.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay. Appreciate both of you.
Planning. Ed Marks? Planning.
We'll get to Joan when we need her. Yes. That's for sure.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This will be relatively succinct presentation, I hope. But any questions you have, please ask. And what information we don't have, we will get for you if we can't answer your questions.
Ed, may I just interrupt you a moment? We're doing the questions at the end of your your presentation, okay?
That's fine. Thank you.
All right.
So this is our budget for this year. As you can see, the net local recommended budget represents about almost a 7% reduction from 2011. We have, even though the total expenditures are higher, that reflects a lot of grant funding programs that will be primarily just in 2012, maybe extending into 2013, but in terms of our overall locally funded operation, we're looking at a reduction of $56,000 on top of, as everybody, I'm sure you've heard this before, cumulative reductions that have been happening over the last several years. Full-time equivalents, this one bears a little explanation because there's a story to be told that will make it a lot clearer, I hope. If you look at the 2011 number, that reflects several things that are changes that don't affect the property tax portion of the budget going forward. Some do. But we had a part-time position, well, a part-year position, I'm sorry, part-time and part-year position that was grant-funded in 2011. It's coming to an end shortly to work on gas drilling issues with the TCOG Committee on Gas Drilling. So that's reflected in that 10 number that increased in 2011. 2011 also saw my position, instead of being shared between public works and planning, became totally within the planning department budget. So that's roughly not quite a half of an FTE there. And then in 2011, we also added the position funded through the room tax funding source to provide planning support to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board and the tourism program in the county. So that number in 2011 reflects a lot of changes. Under the cap, you can see a significant reduction there. The one position for gas drilling goes away, but other than that, it's a significant staff reduction. This year, we had a position become vacant, and we filled it on a part-time basis. So you'll see as we go through here, we talk about a part-time senior planner. That position was already reduced from what was budgeted in 2011, anticipating that we might have financial issues going into 2012. So when we restore that position later in the budget discussion here, that's not a restoration to status quo. We already cut the hours of that position when we filled it in order to both accrue savings for 2011, given that we anticipated and the county administrator and legislature directed us to make savings where we could, and also going into 2012. We'll talk a little bit more about the changes between the cap staffing level and the recommended as we go forward. But there is still a reduction in staffing level in the planning department as a result of this budget proposal. And hopefully you can read this on... did they get to lose this handout?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah,
the
you've got it. Okay.
Everyone has.
It'll be a little easier to read than reading it from the screen, perhaps.
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, these are the requests that were restored under the cap as it's been modified, you know, modified to account for things that the state allows to include. On the right-hand side there, we indicate what that allows us to do in terms of program that we would otherwise not be able to do. So our first priority was to restore a portion of the lost FTEs, particularly to allow us to continue to be prepared to serve a function the legislature has asked us to serve over the years. Almost every year, one or more things have come up where unplanned activities or issues that we've been asked to support the legislature on addressing through analysis or other research. And that's something we really was the last thing we wanted to give up, but we felt like under the base before that we originally had to submit, this was something we wouldn't be able to continue to do. So that was restored. We also had to reduce a position, a support staff position from full-time to part-time. We requested use of rollover to continue that position full-time for 2 years. So that's the second OTR there. The third item is simply to put into the budget funds that would allow us to continue to do municipal planning assistance programs based on matching funds from municipalities.
That's a use of rollover. That should be a net local zero. I did replace this. I don't know why I pulled up the wrong one.
Oh, okay.
So those are both, those bottom three are all net local zero because they all use rollover.
Right, I was getting a little confused myself looking at the slides.
Sorry, Ed.
And then the last one, like I said, is to replace a couple of computers with laptops. We're seeing more and more need to use computers off-site, and that will allow us to move in that direction. Okay, these are the ones that were not under the cap. restoration of staffing level to allow us to continue supporting affordable housing planning program. That was something we would otherwise have to really pull back from. Restoration to allow us to support number four, conservation planning and advisory committee administration. Again, something we would have to pull back from significantly without that additional staffing level. And finally, continued support for the unique natural areas inventory. This is something EMC has been working on an update of over the last few years, and will probably continue for a couple of years, but they're doing work this year and need to continue work into 2012 to complete that. And there was one that was requested and not approved for stream monitoring, and that we can talk about more if you have questions on it. Again, when you see these restoration of FTEs, that's basically adding hours back to existing staff, going from like 35 to 37 and a half in some cases is basically what's involved there, trying to get people back to close to the level that they're working at in 2011, but we do not fully accomplish that. Several staff people are working less hours, even under the recommended additions, compared to what we have today. And this kind of just goes through and summarizes in a way that might be a little easier to follow from where we were starting with the lowest budget we had to submit, the 11.2% reduction, which put us down to 7.6 FTEs. And in red are all the things we would not be doing under that base, affordable housing, conservation planning, things I've already mentioned, and then how we add back in under different OTRs aspects of that work program that we would be able to continue to do based on increasing staff FTEs by kind of marginal amounts as you go down there. But we really tried to figure out what we would be able to continue to do as you added hours back in and identified by program. Again, we tried to create this budget based on program impacts of where we can continue to perform program functions we have been performing based on additional hours available of staff to work on those things. We will not still have full-time equivalents as to what we had budgeted for this year, as I mentioned. That's in the box at the bottom. We'd be half of an FTE below where we were previously, considering those other adjustments for grant-funded positions. So we will be doing a little bit less. We'll be doing our best to maintain the core of our program. We will be, if the budget as recommended goes forward, be able to continue a level of effort in affordable housing, conservation planning, municipal planning assistance, and advisory committee support, as well as being prepared to address emerging issues that we wouldn't have been able to do with the lowest base budget. And I think those things are all very important. It was very difficult to determine where we would trim back if we had to meet the lowest budget. It would have really kind of gutted our efforts in several areas. And that's the summary. And I'm open to questions, and Joan is here to answer questions as well.
I had Brian's hand up, and Brian Carroll. Go ahead, Brian.
This is probably more of a question for Kevin. I'm kind of challenged color type person. Do some of these colors need to be changed?
No.
No?
Those are correct. Where it's blue, it's one time.
Okay. I guess where I was confused was 61, which is shown as at no cost. Explain that to me, would you? Because it's in the description, it has where it's rollover.
Is that
same
which one is
16?
Yeah. It's 61. 61.
Plus it is rollover.
What page?
Yeah.
Yes. Three.
Thank you. Okay. It is hard to roll over.
Sorry, hold on 1 second, Brian.
Yep.
Okay, this is the clerical position.
Yep.
At that point, this is kind of an additive process. So at that OTR, under that amount of money, we were able to use rollover over 2 years to keep a position full-time that would otherwise have to be reduced to half-time. As we added in the other OTRs after the final of recommended budget, that position was funded so that it wouldn't be just a two-year funding. It would be an ongoing funding.
And the rollover goes back into the pot. At that restoration level, they're willing to use their rollover to fund this person for 2 years. So it's no cost to us. But later on, they add that they have additional funding towards that position.
Right.
And they ask to put their rollover back in the bank. So that's why a later OTR is almost $66,000, because it puts the rollover back in reserve.
Okay. Do you see my confusion?
Yes. It is confusing. It was confusing creating the budget, actually, because there were so many scenarios we had to try to address. And in trying to be creative, you know, we looked at a position that we really didn't want to reduce, but we felt that there's a chance that within 2 years we could make a change and live with a half-time position by making other changes in our operations, and perhaps that person would be able to either live with half-time or might be able to retire. Somebody in the office staffing might change. So that was, I think, the note Joe made, and, you know, that the potential at that point a person in the office would be able to retire and we could just redefine the job, but also have to change our operations to accommodate that.
Okay. This is the only department, at least so far, that has done something like this to make it that confusing, because 61 to me, by its text and the way I look at it, there has to be a value associated with it, which would mean it would be in blue. And you know, in the recommended budget, it has, I guess, the sum total of all those in green, which is funded.
That's not something we're which is very green,
see, these colors wouldn't mean anything to you, but they're actually somewhat important to me. And the balance of the total sum of the rollover request is put in as funded.
So I think the confusing part is the fact that this is a department that took it as a scenario building, and they use it as building blocks. And I guess this could be purple in the sense that it is a very unique part of this. So it's a matter of if you choose to go with Joe's recommendation for 112, if you choose to go with his recommendation there, that $38,000 will technically be used to go back into the pot, and we'll be paying for the full halftime position, rather than putting it using it in rollover.
I don't want to take up a whole bunch of time. I'm just, you know, it is very confusing to me. But.
We have one more attempt, and then.
The difference is in the future, without this funding, we'll be phasing out some of our activities over the next 2 years. And some of those are mentioned: planning information, advisory, community support, some municipal planning support. With the funding that leaves it at target funding rather than rollover for a couple of years, to be able to maintain those programs in the future, assuming there's no other changes to our target.
I heard her.
Okay, good. it's a future impact rather than an immediate impact.
And we, you know, there isn't the target in lieu of rollover, you know, approach it anymore, but, you know, we're prepared to, if we get target funding, to give up that part of our rollover back to the general fund, rather than have it go roll back into our budget.
Yes?
Mr. Barksdale said there is no longer target in lieu of rollover.
Well...
Is that correct?
I understood that to be discouraged.
We still accept it. We don't tag it formally that way anymore. It's confusing to use the term Tyler and...
Not to me.
Yeah, but that's
the general public
has
made comments about how difficult that is to understand.
Thank
general
you.
Public plus me.
Plus Peter.
So I would just reiterate that if the... target funding is restored for the position we were proposing to use rollover for. We're prepared to give up that rollover and back into the general fund.
That's clear. Carol.
I'd like to understand better the impact on our advisory boards of not funding that, the 112. First of all, how much of over target request 112 is for the advisory board support and what the impact is, exactly what they have had that they're not going to have?
Well, the advisory board support is something we cannot provide with a half-time support position. That position spends about half-time on advisory board support, and if half of it's gone, that would be the thing that would probably have to go. So the advisory boards would be kind of back to the position we discussed a couple of years ago in another budget scenario where the legislature restored money to do that, of really trying to manage more of their own organizational affairs, agendas, minutes, et cetera, on their, rather than have staff to support doing that.
And which advisory boards would be impacted?
They're all impacted.
So planning
Advisory Board, Water Resources Council, Environmental Management Council, and Strategic Tourism Planning Board all receive staff support from that position. Now, Strategic Tourism Planning partially funds it, so we could probably work something out there, but the other three boards, we wouldn't have staff capability to support in the way they're supported.
Okay, and this would be setting up meetings? Would it include taking minutes?
Yes, all of that. All of that. Staff right now does a lot of scheduling, takes minutes, helps prepare agendas and gets them distributed, all of that work. And it would be extremely limited. We would provide something, but it would be extremely limited. Each board, when we were faced with this before, each board had different things they thought were more critical for them. And we tried to work with them to figure out what we could provide in that potentiality that would be most helpful to them. So it wouldn't necessarily be a blanket across the board. But the reality is, with this position reduced to half time, there would be very limited capability to support many of those things.
Okay. And then on the gas drilling planning, I literally had the governor's office tell me that it would take 100 people to keep up with information about gas drilling, and so they're just going to leave everything up to the DEC and rely on those of us out here to be and our staffs in our counties and municipalities to be trying to weigh in. There's this whole process, but I assume it's not going to, the discussion about it will not end at the December 12th.
It will not end, but that level of activity will not be being provided by us. And I don't think DEC even has the 100 people they need to keep up with it.
Yeah, right. So what would be in here, what would your staff be able to do as we move forward?
It would be under that category of emerging issues, research, and analysis that continues to emerge in different ways as time goes on. We will be, without the role of that other position, preparing comments on the recent updated version of the SGEIS. We will continue to follow wherever it goes and what we can, with respect to what we can offer, but we do not have a staff person devoted to supporting municipalities in their responses and activities related to gas drilling.
And are you making any attempts to continue that at all or not?
We're kind of evaluating how that position ends up, where we've gotten to, what might be needed. I know there's people in TCOG that would like to see continued support. Whether that continued support is best located in the county or not, I think remains to be determined, or whether there's going to be funding support for that ongoing.
Mike.
Thanks.
On the support for advisory boards, Ed, if we cut that figure, that 64,000, let's say we cut it to 30,000, what would that do for staffing? What could you provide at that level?
Well, there's a whole number of, as you see, a number of programs listed there that are kind of bundled in that number.
Please use the mic. That's the kind of detail we can provide in response. We just don't have it at our fingertips today. We have all that analysis done. We just need to bring every...
Looking at the things that are there, we would certainly want to have a conversation with the legislature as to priorities in those, amongst those things. And we would probably suggest to you, if we're having partial funding, where we would suggest that the funding go, and take, you know, your direction as to where to go with that.
Thank you, Ed. Rural Library?
No.
I didn't see your hand, Julie. Go ahead.
You have an OTR Priority 8, which is not recommended by the county administrator. It's titled Continue and Expand Stream Monitoring Program. The legislature had provided 3 years of money to support the Community Science Institute's work. I think that ends this year.
That's correct. This is the next phase of that work.
And of all the times to be stopping that with fracking on the horizon, it just seems very foolish to me. I wonder if if you can explain a little what we're losing and what might still be done.
What we're losing, and I may ask Joan to elaborate on this, is trying to collect baseline data that might be useful if there was future contamination that got into streams as a baseline to compare samples that might be taken after, say, a spill or something like that. I think that's the primary intent of this. So that's what we're losing. What they're continuing would probably be their ongoing citizen program that we didn't support, the parts of the program that we never supported.
The volunteers.
Supported, the volunteer monitoring. But I couldn't speak for them. You may want to have, you know, someone come from CSI and talk to you about that if you really want to know more about exactly what will continue, what will not be done, and what they hope to have done.
Does the amount that was in the OTR seem reasonable to you for what we've gotten?
I think we didn't think it was, it seemed reasonable for the scope of what they're proposing to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Pat.
Okay.
Take two, rural libraries.
Thank you all for your time and all the effort you put into the county budget and for supporting libraries as well. I'm Tina Winstead. I'm the director from the Newfield Library, and I'm joined today with Kim Arachi, who's the director of Finger Lakes. The other library directors are in the back. We have Molly Faust from T-Bird, Sarah from the new director from Groton, Susie Lansing, and Diane from Dryden. I'm going to put on my library glasses, not because I need them. This is a request that reflects the support for all the five rural libraries and Finger Lakes. We're all grouped together. We provide essential services to our neighborhoods without a big price tag. We have really committed staff, well-trained staff, who work for fairly low income, without health benefits, not competitive wages, no benefits, health care. We're the cornerstone of any democracy. I can't go any further without saying that because I like to say it a lot. I do believe that. We provide information to everyone. We're the Main Street libraries. A lot of our patrons can walk to us. We know them by name. We're small, so we're very approachable. People come in with all manner of questions. And again, we serve everyone. Sorry, it's very sluggish. We serve everyone. We serve families, teens. I think you'll note on the top left, that's my library. We have a teen corner, and kids come after school, and they hang out. And you can't tell very well, but we have these fantastic Harry Potter shields that a teacher made for us for the Harry Potter party this summer. And children, of course. Everyone thinks libraries and children's go together, and they do. And seniors. We provide services for seniors, anywhere from providing special programs to bringing them books to even story times. Some of our seniors are volunteers, but not all of our volunteers are seniors, as you can see. Our volunteers do everything for libraries, from running the circulation desk to running our book sales to delivering books to daycare. Without them, we would not be able to do what we do. We wouldn't be able to be as efficient with our public funds. What we do is we collaborate with other organizations. We share our resources. We act as a center for local programs and gatherings, and we're responsive to the needs of our communities. And we have a wide range of services, and they're multidimensional. I have to say, libraries are unique entities. Our services aren't really duplicated by any other organization, and we serve all patrons, all socioeconomic levels, ethnicities, and abilities. We exemplify many of the mission statements that the county legislator has set forth. We strengthen families and communities. We enhance the quality of life. We respect and protect individuals' freedom of expression and their privacy. There are many other ways. We bring art to our communities. We have story times. We have story times for our schools, our communities, our homeschoolers. We reach out to our communities. With our interlibrary loan program, we turn one library's worth of books into 33, thanks to Finger Lakes. And we have all manner of programs. But don't stop at the traditional, very nostalgic programming and library traditions. We have a lot of technology. We have one of the few places in any community where any person can walk off the street and use a state-of-the-art computer. We have broadband internet, free Wi-Fi, and on top of that, we provide assistance. We do trainings. We help people one-on-one. We have reference services, anything from medical care to what's my next favorite author. And we have job seeker assistance. We're a central location for listings in the county and town. And we offer one-on-one help. People have to fill out applications for pretty much any job anymore as an online application. And not everybody's well equipped to handle that. And the demand for our services is increasing. Circulation is up 34% in Newfield in the past several years, 36% in Dryden, 20% in Lansing. It's just going up. And so are the visits in the door. I mean, again, we're looking at numbers that are in the 30s of increases. And I think it was, let me double, Groton has had like a double amount of patrons walking in the door for their evening hours. Our computer use is really up everywhere. Oops, sorry. And program participation. I know in Newfield this summer we had the highest level of participation in programs that we've seen in years. I think Trumansburg has really skyrocketed their summer reading program participation with the adults and teens. County support, community support, excuse me. I hope county support for the library is also huge. But we have a little saying lately, if we build it, they will come. Dryden enlarged their library 3 times and has had just phenomenal numbers of participation in every single facet, and just tons of people loaded the streets to come to their grand opening. So down to the real reason we're here is our budget for the coming year. The recommended budget by the county administrator reflects the amount necessary for maintenance of effort, which is required by the state. At this point, Kim is going to talk to you a little bit more about what exactly that means and define that.
This is probably deja vu from what you heard last Monday from Susan Curry from TCPS. Maintenance of effort is actually covered under Education Law, Section 272. And what MO mandates to us as the library system, that local funding has to remain at 95% of the average of 2 years. And if it doesn't, then we have some big consequences for us. And that's a 25% cut in our state aid. And as a system, we provide for 5 counties those big ticket items that our public libraries couldn't afford on their own, such as the library catalog, catalog records, databases, delivery, and that 25% cut in state aid, which would be huge. So just a little bout, you know, $900 for us would trigger MOE, and that would equal a loss of $297,000 in our local aid. So it's a pretty big mandate for us, and that would include $34,527 for TCPL and aid. And for our member libraries and pass-through aid, it's close to $20,000, so some fairly big numbers. For FLIS, what we do with county funding really helps us offset delivery costs. Delivery costs are over $100,000 a year, and that $14,000 to $15,000 we get at the county level really helps offset what we deliver to Tompkins County patrons. And it's that beauty that Tina was talking to, that you have 33 member library items at your fingertips, and over 30,000 items in this year alone have moved between member libraries coming into Tompkins County. It also supports our mail-it program out of our headquarters here in Ithaca. So if you're homebound and can't access library services, we mail it to you through U.S. Post. So wonderful ways to connect people to their service. And the money really makes a huge difference in the lives of citizens. So I'm going to turn it back over to talk about a little bit what this means to the local level.
The property tax level is a base amount that would be a critical help to us, but it doesn't give us the MOE that is required for Finger Lakes especially. Our second over the target request is at the minimum level to sustain our maintenance of effort. Without this one, as Kim says, we'd have be at risk of losing some state funding and even violating the charter. This OTR here is the amount that would bring us back to our 2011 levels, which we actually considered a hardship. And it reflects, just so you can see the numbers, it means to us it's $1,861 for each rural library and $909 for Finger Lakes at this level. So last year's reduction, we found it came during a time when we saw increased library usage, more service demands. So community members are using the library more than ever for searching, entertainment, technology, and all the other information needs. So for this request, it basically it means to us individually $2,370 for each rural library and $1,208 for Finger Lakes. And that brings us back to 2010 levels. And these dollar amounts are quite small, I know, in relation to your overall budget, But the impact they have on our rural communities is pretty extensive. And we've really maintained our services in the face of all of this. We haven't filled vacant positions. Existing staff has taken on heavier workloads. And I feel like we're at a skeleton budget now. The only place for us now to reduce our funding is in our collection developments, our staff time, and open hours. We don't have anywhere else that we can do this. Library activity is increasing because our services are essential in today's world. We can't weather another reduction in funding without seriously impacting our community and their needs. So we are respectfully requesting our funding be restored to that 2010 level. And I'd be happy to answer questions, and so would the rest of us.
Questions for the rural, Michael, and then Will.
I always mention when we're talking about the rural libraries that I'm a trustee of the Dryden Library, Southworth Library, just for information. I've received an email or two from the Newfield Group, and I wondered if you don't get this over target, what it does to your library and maybe the other libraries as well.
Well, I think that what we have determined is it for us $1,000 means 1 hour less a week of open hours.
So if you get if you didn't get 2,300, it's 2 hours a week.
Yeah.
Is that similar for the others?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Will.
So I was reminded when Susan was here last week that they do not actually use money that generated from the budget for building the collection. Is that also true of the rural libraries, or do you
no.
folks? No. Okay. So I would imagine that's a huge part of what you do.
Yeah. There are grants that have been written, little grants that help out a little. Mm-hmm.
So
no.
What's in play here is, however, not the collection. It's literally the hours open. Thank you.
Peter.
Did you ever try to figure out how much of your effort in dollars was devoted to, I guess, what I would call the library of my childhood, which had books, and what a library was a place you came in and got some books and a little bit of advice from the librarian about what kind of book you want, and that was it. And then everything else I'd call non-traditional. If you had to make a guess, do you have any idea how those would break down in those two categories?
I think, relatively speaking, the rural small libraries have much more of the old traditional nostalgic feel. People in big libraries, my aunt in Baltimore, they just did this beautiful big library, and she says, I don't want it. I want to talk to a person. I don't want to check out my own books. So we really still do all of that. And what do you guys think? What do you think?
Susie, please use the mic.
All right. Susie from Lansing. I can just tell you that I personally work, I'm scheduled to work 32 hours a week, or that's what my job is contracted for, but I'm on the desk 30 hours a week doing reference, checking people in and out, and that doesn't really get me any. I work a lot over my hours to do all the extra things like the collection development and scheduling and all those things. But I work on the desk doing that traditional library work quite a bit of my week of what I'm contracted for. We all work quite a bit more than that. But
anyone else back there want to comment?
I'll just throw my oar in. I'm Diane from Dryden. What I find is that we do a lot of that. People come to us and want suggestions for books, want us to lead them to a book to check out or another material. And we integrate that with the technology that we have in a way that blends the traditional and the non-traditional that they can't do on their own a lot.
Frank, did you have a hand up?
Molly from Schumannsburg.
Oh, go ahead, Molly.
No, I would just put in that while we do we do a lot of the traditional, here's a book, this is how I can help you with a reference question, I'm also finding that we give a lot of free tech help. whether it's with ebooks, people coming in with an iPad or a computer. I'm helping them with laptops, helping them with documents, helping them with their software, helping them with their digital cameras. So the range of training and expertise and technical knowledge that's required for the job is increasing a lot, and is definitely much more substantial. So most of us are trained librarians. We went and got a master's degree in library science to do this kind of technical work. So the job is definitely broadening, even if the funding isn't by any means.
Good comment. Anyone else back there? I had some hands over here. Frank and Leslie.
Yeah, we've got a lot of new faces here since over the last couple of years. Some of us are new faces, too. Over the years, some of us have learned that the different libraries are funded, have different funding streams. And in addition to the county, some receive funding from school districts, some from villages, some even from towns. Can you tell us which of you receive funding from the other sources, and how robust does that look for 2012?
Well, we do all have different types of charters. Newfield is an association library. We get our funding from the county board, the town board, and one public school ballot. Susie's a school district public library, as is Groton, Sarah at Groton. So they get a public vote on the school ballot and county funding. Diane is also an association library, but she receives county funding.
Some village, some town.
And has. Yeah, village, town, and has an endowment.
Village, town, and then the endowment fund takes up the lion's share.
So, and how that stands, you know, the public vote is the public vote. They vote on an increase or not. We personally try to not ask every year at Newfield, and we asked last year. So.
But are you assured of at least last year's, whatever the funding level, if my recollection is right.
For the public vote, you are.
Yeah, you need a vote in order to, if you want an increase, you need to go to a public vote. Otherwise, you get what you had received last year.
But the board votes, there's no guarantee for.
One more question, Jim. The other one, more for Finger Lakes. Mm-hmm. When I was chairing the library committee, Finger Lakes was always looked at as a separate entity from the four. At that time, there were only four rural libraries then, and then we brought you in. But Finger Lakes was a separate entity and would receive funding separately. It wasn't lumped in with the other five libraries. What happened? Was that something we did? Or something Kevin did?
No, it was before my time, too. I don't even know.
That was before my time, too, Frank.
Was it?
Yeah, I started here.
I think it's something you did, Frank.
Probably was.
It can't be before your time, Frank.
No, probably before mine, too. Anyway, that was just a curiosity question. Thank you.
Leslie.
So I got a little lost somewhere around the $297,000 that you can potentially lose from the state if you're $99 less in terms of your funding. There's the formula, standard formula. Is that all what's coming from the county? Is if there's a loss in county funding, not everything else, but just county funding?
How the state looks at it, they tally up county funding and any local aid funding. So anything through school ballots, anything that's coming through municipality, public funding.
Okay, so not just our share of it, but some
everything
of what you mentioned with the district votes, et cetera. Thank you.
Brian.
Just a brief comment. I know last year, each of you had funding cuts, and yet I was pretty impressed with the amount of increased usership from each of them. I don't know how you did it, if each of you worked a lot more hours than you normally do. I mean, I'm very impressed with Groton up 50%. That's great. They must be rigorously studying to be a county legislator or something.
If we lose those 2 hours a week, it may not sound like a lot, but we already have people saying, why aren't you open more? Be more. Can't you be open in the morning? Can't you be open more in the evening? Right. And we can't. And if we drop below a certain number, we're in danger of losing our charter. So this is a real danger to us now. We're in trouble, or could be.
I'd also like to mention when you were asking about our town funding, our village funding, a lot of the organizations that support us, for example, like Community Arts Partnership and the Trumansburg Ulysses, like Joint Youth Commission, and a lot of them are seeing cuts as well. So basically, we're looking at cuts from every other funding entity, with the exception of our school district ballot, which is no more than half of our, at least in Trumansburg, it's about 70% of our budget. So all of that is all, even if we didn't get any cut from the funding and were restored to our 2010 levels, we're still going to have a difficult time figuring out what we're going to do about the cuts from other entities that are indirectly funded through the state or through the county. So,
any other comments? First thing, thank you all very much for appearing here this evening. And secondly, someone once said to me, as economic times get bad, libraries seem to fill up more. And clearly, that's at least one reason those things are happening, as you all know. I can promise you we will make every effort to look at this particular request very closely. Thank you all for coming.
I just want to thank the librarian from Trumansburg for the punchline of the evening. It'll resonate with me.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Molly, do you still have the train display on?
The train display?
Yeah. Isn't that going on in your library right now?
No, we don't have a train display. We have a book sale. Oh.
There you go. Here's another one.
I'm going to take 10 now, and we'll come back with Solid Waste Management Division, Workforce Development, and HSC to finish up the evening. We'll take 10.
Thank you.